AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franzen. The Senate confirmed Kash Patel to head the FBI today. The vote 51-49, with two Republicans joining Democrats in a no vote. ABC's Pierre Thomas has more.
The biggest concern that was expressed on Capitol Hill is the notion that Patel was seen as very partisan. He was on the campaign trail at different points with former President and now President Trump when he was running for office. He had written some things and made statements about enemies of the former president and now president.
Israeli police say there was a series of explosions across Tel Aviv today on buses. No one was harmed. Earlier, a convoy carrying the bodies of four hostages held by Hamas in Gaza were returned to Israel, including a four-year-old and an eight-month-old abducted in the October 7th attacks. Virginia digging out after a foot of snow and brutal cold, keeping its grip on much of the country. This is ABC News.
This is your local Civic Media radio station. Want to hear even more? Anytime? Find all of it at civicmedia.us.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. Residents in the town of Buena Vista also had a local primary election for two town supervisor spots. Five candidates were vying for the two spots, with the top four vote-getters moving on to the general election. Names as they appeared on the ballot were Jake Kleckner, Zachary Tomei, Ronald Morris, Gordon Brockway, and Jeremiah Robert Ringelstetter. The results show Gordon Brockway led in voting with 81 and Jake Kleckner with 70. Jeremiah Robert Ringelstetter received 65 votes, and Zachary Tomei and Ronald Morris each received 61. As a result of the fourth-place tie, a coin toss will be held to determine who moves on between Zachary Tomei and Ronald Morris to run in April. Protesters marched on the state capitol. Organized by the 50-51 movement, the protest around the nation came in response to what organizers describe as the anti-democratic and illegal actions of the Trump administration. The protest follow a series of executive orders signed by President Donald Trump and actions led by billionaire Elon Musk agency. Protesters called for Trump's impeachment and investigation into Musk. The idea for a protest in each state originated on Reddit in late January, and Monday's protest is the second nationwide protest by the group following an event on February 5th. Watch out for scams this tax season. Scammers are using tax season to try and take your money. IRS spokesman Christopher Miller says one common trick is using scary messages to demand money. These can come over the phone, in text messages, on social media, or even letters crafted to look like they're from government agencies. Miller says the IRS or other government agencies will never demand immediate payment over the phone. If you get one of these calls or messages, simply hang up or delete it. If you're concerned about tax payments, visit the IRS website at irs.gov. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
Bobby Portis suspended 25 games. Hi, I'm Mike Clemens with sports. The Bucks' Bobby Portis suspended for the next 25 games by the NBA after testing positive for a non-approved painkiller. Portis says he thought he was taking Toradol for an elbow injury. Instead, an assistant of his gave him a prescription for Tramadol, a painkiller banned by the league last spring. The Bucks host the Clippers tonight at Fiserv Forum. Giannis Antetokounmpo talking for the first time since suffering that calf muscle injury.
I feel a little bit of the discomfort on my calf. I've said this year I want to be smart. One of my goals is to be available for the playoffs. Obviously, we are 30 games away. It's a long time. But at the end of the day, like, my main focus is to take care of my body, be smart.
Both Giannis and Damian Lillard participating in practice yesterday.
We went hard, but not that hard. And so we'll see with him and Dame. We don't know yet.
That's head coach Doc Rivers with sports. I'm Mike Clemens.
Local radio for you and your community. It's Civic Media's mission with stations across Wisconsin. Find your favorites at civicmedia.us.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and cold tonight, lows 0 to 5 below. Sunny and milder tomorrow, highs in the mid-20s. Continued warming for the weekend, mostly sunny and around 30 Saturday, partly sunny and around 40 Sunday. Right now it's 22.
It might be cold outside, but we're back on the road to find out what makes Wisconsin great, including the American Bourbon Finder,
Road trip!
It's the best ski race in the world. I'm Todd Alba. I'm taking you to the Birkenbeiner and what it means for the state.
Normally, we're about 2,600 people during Berkey Week. That gets up to 20, 30,000.
Join us from Hayward, Wisconsin.
A special Todd Alba show Thursday and Friday.
At noon on your local Civic Media radio station and the app.
Imagine home. The smell of coffee, the sound of a lawnmower, the sun's warmth on your face. Free to be yourself. Surrounded by love that helps you grow. This is a place to call home. That's an American dream we all deserve. But in 50% of U.S. states, you could legally be denied housing if you are LGBTQ+. Get the facts and hear real stories at lovehasnolabels.com. Brought to you by Love Has No Labels and the Ad Council.
Jane Matinair and Greg Bach.
Coming up on the show, Dan Schaefer from the Recombobulation Area joins us. Pete Schwabe from Nightlight will be here to talk about the major plot flaw in the movie Green and Gold. Don't miss it.
Matinair on air, weekday mornings at 10. News from the center, WRCE. Broadcasting across the state of Wisconsin on the Civic Media Radio Network and around the world on the Civic Media app. This is the Dom Salvia Show. And now, here's your host, Dom Salvia.
And welcome to the Dom Salvia Show. Thank you so much for tuning in. You could be a big part. Join us on the lines, 855-752-4842. Jess P.S. working hard today. Good to see you, Jess. Thank you. And Jazz is hell, my co-host for the day, James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, a law review broadcasting right here on the Civic Media Radio Network on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. Jim, welcome back, man.
Dom, always a delight on any day of the week, including Thursdays.
I know, kind of working it up, mixing it up a little bit here today. Hey, Jim, are you looking for a job? Apparently.
Even a job I used to have, right?
Milwaukee's U.S. attorney out amid Trump's effort to clean house at the Justice Department. You know, got to get rid of the old justice and bring in the new justice.
Those Biden appointees, and heaven forbid, even the Obama appointees, we can't have them around
especially
anymore.
Especially those guys. Jim, but this is not uncommon, right?
Right. This is so it's good to be measured in a time when everything else is unmeasured, right? This is one of those stories that should not have people upset just because U.S. attorneys, including Greg Honstad, who was, frankly, I promoted him to my first assistant position many years ago. I worked with him. And he knew, as did I, that when you apply to be the U.S. attorney and the president nominates you, the Senate confirms you, that there will come a time at the end of the presidential term when you, too, will leave. It's not always right away. It's not always January 20th. But it will come, and it happens in every administration. You are no longer a civil servant, which we've talked about a lot. You are a political appointee. Now, the job itself is not political, which is weird and odd. Shouldn't be. But the reality is that this particular decision by the White House is perhaps one of the only orders that does make some sense. And as regular, your listeners should not be animated to focus too much on this one. There are a few other things going on right now that probably more appropriately demand and require their attention.
So he's not being let go, Gregory Honstad, because of his performance necessarily.
This is just not
a new administration. The new guy gets to get his team, and that's just how it is. Well, how did it go? And I saw a list of U.S. attorneys in the Milwaukee area. Right. I think General Sentinel had it out there. And you were down there on the list quite a bit. That was some time ago.
Right.
There's like probably five or six since.
Absolutely. Well, again, when I left, what happened was that Greg Honstad was then my first assistant. And so he became the acting U.S. attorney. And then after that, when the first Trump administration appointed a fellow named Matt Krieger, who actually I hired into the office many years ago, again, underscoring, we do not ask questions about what your political background is.
I got to tell all these people you hired end up getting fired.
Right.
I got to question your judgment, sir.
Exactly.
I mean, especially coming on this show.
All right. And so when Matt leaves the office, then after the end of Trump number one, once the same thing happens. The first assistant becomes an acting, and then at some point, the new president, as Joe Biden did, appoints someone new. That was Greg. Lots of not really revolving doors, but again, you've also got my criminal chief elevated to the first assistant position. His name, Rick Froehling. Rick Froehling is now the acting U.S. attorney. unlikely. Know Rick quite well. Unlikely that he will apply to be the U.S. attorney. There'll be somebody else there. But for now, he is the one who's more than keeping the lights on. All very competent people. But again, the progression, the succession, if you will, of all of these U.S. attorneys acting and otherwise. I was acting for about a year, even between administrations many, many years ago. And so none of this is atypical or unusual. Don't have your hair on fire about this.
I've had goldfish last longer than some of these U.S. attorneys.
Right.
Just as a procedural question, I'm just curious. If it's the assistant has been there, as you said, Rick Froehling, first U.S. assistant attorney since 2015. He's now named the acting U.S. attorney. Why does this go with the U.S. attorney? I mean, why not go down the list? Why not get rid of Rick and everybody else? You know what I mean? What is it about that top one that makes that the ones recycled out when the new administration comes in?
I agree with you entirely. Once again, it is this fiction that somehow these appointments are political. It's both the U.S. attorneys and, get this, United States marshals are also nominated by a president, confirmed by the Senate. You've got all sorts of other agency heads, other special agents in charge. You name the agency, they're there. They don't go through that process. A lot of this is anachronistic, going back to 1789. It doesn't make a lot of sense. These should be, candidly, maybe not indefinite civil service appointments, but the notion that they are political and therefore we've got to get rid of this person, whether it's Jim Santel or Matt Krieger or Greg Honstad or someone else there, going back even long before I was there, because they are so politically steeped and all of their decisions are premised upon what the Republican platform or the Democratic platform would say, that's simply wrong. We just don't talk about those things because we don't have to. Issues of crime and prosecution, issues of civil litigation are guided by, should be guided.
Historically,
under most departments of justice, most good U.S. attorneys and attorneys generals will tell you it is not to be directed by a political direction here. And again, I will tell you a story that many of my colleagues have been repeated recently. Every single term, the U.S. attorneys get together virtually every year to talk about policy and that sort of thing. At the end of my term, we all gathered, yes, that's right, in the West Room of the White House, the West Wing, on the East Room of the White House of that building. And Barack Obama addressed all of us and said, you know what? You are not my attorneys. You don't represent me. You represent the people of the United States of America.
What a lost opportunity.
Right?
Come on. Every good strongman will get you guys in line right away. Right. A little loyalty pledge.
Exactly. He could have come in, and he didn't do it. And he started with that, Dom. He wasn't even talking about, the weather here in Washington or who had won the World Series, that kind of thing. He was talking from the very start about the rule of law. In this administration, we've got the present Attorney General Pam Bondi not only specifically saying we are working for this president, but also establishing through the protocols and the policies of her own office that the president can pick up the phone and direct who it is who should be indicted, who should not be, what litigation should be initiated, which shouldn't be. Again, the president can describe very generally focuses, but not specifics. In this administration, the tradition that I knew for the 30 years that I was there is gone.
Folks, you're listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That's James Santel. He's a former U.S. attorney, host of Amicus, the Law Review, right here on the Civic Media Radio Network on Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. A lot of thoughts here. Let's talk about another U.S. attorney, this one from the District of Columbia.
Yes. Yeah.
Apparently, according to Raw Story, a rep, Robert Garcia, a Democrat, he posted a letter that he received from U.S. Attorney Edward Martin on the Department of Justice letterhead asking about his attacks, quote unquote, on Elon Musk. Oh, this is interesting. Now, this is what that newly appointed U.S. attorney in D.C. This is what the letter said to a Democratic lawmaker. As U.S. attorney for the District of Columbia, I receive requests for information and clarification. I take these requests seriously and act on them with letters like this one you are receiving. Martin began, not indicating who sent him the quote-unquote request, according to the author of this piece. The U.S. attorney goes on. At this time, I respectfully request that you clarify your comments from February 12th of 2025. Man, these guys work fast, man. 8 days ago? During a live interview with CNN, when asked how Democrats can stop Elon Musk, you spoke clearly, quote, What the American people wants is for us to bring actual weapons to this bar fight. This is an actual fight for democracy, the letter continued. Now, Musk, of course, you're talking, you know all about Musk. Now, Garcia was accused of making a threat against Musk while talking about the political battle between Trump and the Democrats as a bar fight. Quote, this sounds to me like a threat to Mr. Musk, an appointed representative of President Donald Trump, who you call a D blank blank K, I can't say it, and government staff who works for him. Their concerns have led to this inquiry. We take threats against public officials very seriously. G6! Sorry. G6! And I look forward to your cooperation with my letter of inquiry after request. Thank you in advance for your assistance. Please respond by February 24th. Should you have further questions, yada, yada, yada. Congressman Garcia replied, so if you criticize Elon Musk, Trump's DOJ will send you this letter. Members of Congress must have the right to forcefully oppose the Trump administration. I will not be silenced.
So many things to unpack there.
Wow, dude. Okay, so, and you just said, you know, historically speaking, generally speaking, this seems very political to me, right, sir. Do you think that was an actual threat?
I do not. Yeah. And again, perhaps Congressman Garcia could have avoided this if he had said, Democrats have got to be up for the fight. And it's just that, you know, that adjective, the bar fight, it sounds as if you've got knives pulled and you don't. He's talking about pushing back on all of these things that are happening right now. He's not talking about going down to Georgetown and taking on Musk in a bar fight with bottles broken and those kinds of things. And so it's concerning to me, number one, that in a city where an awful lot of criticism is heaped in all directions, right?
Right.
This is the kind of thing, frankly, the attorneys general for whom I worked, which included Eric Holder and Loretta Lynch and certainly Janet Reno, on a regular basis, right? They are attacked. They're attacked viciously by members of Congress. I hate to say that's exactly what they bought into, but that's sort of the
sure.
way this works, right?
Come on,
right?
Just step out. Half the people aren't going to dig what you're doing.
Absolutely. And again, Eric Holder was at one point held in contempt by Congress. Was he happy about that? No. Did he make comments about Congress people, about their reasons for doing that? Of course he did. That's number one. So we talk about the language. And second, I'm concerned that the U.S. attorney in the District of Columbia, the largest United States attorney's office in the nation. They handle not only the federal cases, but we would call the state cases as well in Superior Court there, is at this time spending his time writing a letter to a congressman. Obviously, it's intended to get exactly the response it gets, which is, gosh, maybe you have crossed the line. And the not-so-subtle implication of that letter, of course, is, congressman, we may be opening a file on you because maybe you have committed a federal crime. The answer is you have not. And I'm hoping, and again, I do not know Ed Martin. He certainly has been a loyalist, but hoping that Ed Martin is doing this for the purposes of public consumption and not because there is a name now of Congressman Garcia on a criminal investigative file. That shouldn't happen.
Public consumption for Trump's consumption. That's what this is for. Right, folks, you're listening to the Dom Salve Show. James Santel joining me today. You can do so as well. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. It's a phone line. It's a text line. Don't forget, the end of the show, last segment of the day, tell us something good, end the show on a positive note. Got a lot to get to today. Things are going great in the Trump administration. Just ask him. Also, Cash Patel, head of the FBI. Hell, there's probably a file on you now, Jim.
They probably are.
And
yes.
also, Congressman Derek Van Orden, well, he is working hard for the Wisconsin citizens. He wants to impeach a federal judge who had the temerity to stop Elon Musk. Come back with us.
This is News from the Center, WRCE.
I'm Dan Schaefer. Let's recombobulate. Wisconsin's next major election is already here. The race for state Supreme Court is ramping up with just a few weeks to go before the April 1st general election. Much like the race 2 years ago, this will determine the balance of power on the court. If Susan Crawford wins, the court remains in liberal control. If Brad Schimmel wins, the court flips back to a right-wing majority. But there are a number of differing dynamics from the race in 2023. That race, won by Janet Protasiewicz, was the culmination of a years-long effort for liberals to win control of the court. Now they're playing defense to keep that majority. This also begins a run of 6 years in a row with a race for Wisconsin's Supreme Court on the spring election ballot. Because of which justices will be up in coming years, if Crawford wins this year, the court will likely remain in liberal control until at least 2028. Find more bigger picture analysis of the race in my latest column at the Recombobulation Area.
Earl Ingram.
Mayor Johnson, we used to have a saying called a switcheroo. Talking about one thing while behind the scenes there's a greater issue.
This man was elected president of the United States to focus in on making everyday life more affordable. But our push to remove lead service lines, our health department, are impacted by the things that the Trump administration have targeted since they've been in office. Yeah, it's been a huge switcheroo. It's not been about saving folks money. I mean, this is going to cause more pain.
The Earl Ingram Show, weekday mornings 8 to 10 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. The Todd Alba Show.
Elon Musk putting in so much money that it drowns out other people's voices to decide who our next Supreme Court justice is. Whether or not you're going to vote Republican or Democrat or Schimmel or Crawford, your voice is getting drowned out by Elon Musk, a guy who has no business in Wisconsin. And you don't think that Brad Schimmel is going to be in Elon Musk's pocket? It's going to affect us in Wisconsin.
The Todd Alba Show. Weekdays, noon till 2 on your local civic media radio station and on the app. You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
And we are back. Thank you for listening to the Dom Salvia Show. That musical long distance dedication going out to our pal Casper. Hey, man, playing drums, singing hard. Appreciate you, brother. 855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC-JESS-PS on the board. James Santel joining me today, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus. Check him out Saturdays, 9 to 11 a.m. right here on the Civic Media Radio Network. Derek Van Orden, the Wisconsin Congress, but I can't believe this guy still around. He's working hard for the American people, for you, and he wants to impeach a judge. U.S. District Judge Paul Engelmeyer issued a preliminary injunction blocking DOJ on February 8th in response to a lawsuit filed by Democratic attorneys general, including Wisconsin's AG Josh Call. The judge was appointed to the bench by Obama. The lawsuit claimed DOJ cannot legally access Treasury records that include Social Security numbers and bank account details. Why not? What's the problem? Right. In response to the injunction, Musk accused the judge of being, quote, a corrupt judge protecting corruption in his social media platform X. He needs to be impeached now. And heeding the call, Derek Van Orden. And this isn't even a young kid. I mean, he's going after a judge. Van Orden, the Republican from Prairie du Chien, introduced a bill Tuesday to begin the impeachment process, which accuses the judge of high crimes and misdemeanors. Quote, Paul Engelmeyer, as a judge of the United States District Court for the Southern District of New York, engaged in judicial misconduct when he halted President Donald J. Trump's executive order establishing and implementing the president's Department of Government Efficiency on purely political grounds, demonstrating clear bias and prejudice against the president and the 74 million Americans who voted for him, Derek Van Orden resolutions state.
The second story in as many minutes almost in which we've got somebody doing something, I would say it's for the consumption of maybe half or the entire nation, but half of the nation. You, Don, would say it's for the consumption of one who happens to live at 1600 Pennsylvania Avenue. That's what this is all about. It's going nowhere. And the thing that people should have their hair on fire about is not the predicate for these articles of impeachment. It is this notion that someone who has not been confirmed by the Senate, let's go back and say that just this too.
Yeah, yeah.
There is no such thing as a Department of Government Efficiency. That does not exist, right? Only the Congress can put that together. Only a Congress can establish an agency. So we've got a false construct here. We've got somebody who I suspect has never undergone a background check of the sort that, frankly, all the U.S. attorneys do, all the nominees do. And he and his group of...
Yeah, but he's rich, right? So you don't need a background check because he's rich.
Apparently not, right? And his wunderkinds then show up at the IRS doors and they say, give us your information. This is one, unlike the departures of U.S. attorneys, where Americans should be in the street. Oh, my goodness. You're going to get all of the tax information, income, all sorts of property information, not just Social Security numbers, but records of going back many years, records that basically reveal all kinds of things that are protected by law. I'll give you another reference point. If during the course of opening a legitimate investigation inside the U.S. Attorney's Office or inside Main Justice in Washington, D.C., I feel that there is something financial that is appropriate to know. What is the income of a Jim Santel or a Dom Salvia? I have to make an application to get this tax information as the U.S. attorney, right? Because you've got so many protections appropriate.
You can't just get someone's login and password and go grab it?
Apparently you cannot. And there's an application process. And again, if you have not established a sufficient basis upon which to do that, you can't simply say, well, we're opening a criminal file and therefore let's get tax records. You've got to have some financial aspect, something about the property, what they've been doing.
Probable cause,
some employment information, all those kinds of things. The United States attorneys, 92 of them around the country, can't get this information. But Musk and his wunderkinds show up and they say, give it to us. Yeah. And so going back again to what our local congressman has done here, this is ridiculous. This is absurd. I would like to think he knows better, but I don't know. And hopefully, some cooler minds, even on this issue, will prevail. And this will be going nowhere once again, because it should go nowhere.
855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I'm still thinking about the fact that you're right. This is not a department. I mean, this is just something totally
we
made up.
This up.
This is all made up.
And yes, to be clear, the president has put together a piece of paper with his very dramatic signature at the bottom and shown it all around.
Not a piece of paper, really.
And yes, he's doing all kinds of things. Just because the president signs off on something doesn't make it legal. And once again, there's a manner of putting together mechanisms not only for establishing new things you want to do inside government, but also addressing those things that are out there. There are an awful lot of things that Congress can and should be doing. Oversight. How many times have we talked about that, Tom?
They're not going to be doing any oversight of this guy. Not right now, anyway.
Absolutely.
Not until it gets really, really bad
for
those Republicans.
Right.
I mean, they've totally allowed Donald Trump and will continue to allow him. I mean, it's only 30 days in, man.
Exactly.
To do whatever they
today.
Want. Yeah.
A month ago today, right?
Are you satisfied, Jim? We've only got a couple minutes left in the segment. Are you satisfied, generally speaking, with the pushback, you know, legally speaking, and the judges and some of their decisions on this? I mean, Chuck had allowed for some of the stuff to go through.
Right.
But this judge did not.
Right.
What's your sense just kind of overall?
Yeah, and there are others plainly on birthright citizenship who are saying you must be joking, and that's happening around the country.
Yeah.
Most of the craziness out there is being met by federal judges who are laughing at the, quite literally laughing and saying, where are the attorneys talking to the president? And so you do have federal judges, and I think they are the bulwark against some of this. Those opinions, those decisions, of course, go up to courts of appeals. And where might they end up? They might end up, we can all say it together, at the United States Supreme Court. And we know that 8 months ago, the Supreme Court gave Donald Trump the authority to do what he's doing. Talked about this muscular, vibrant need to move quickly and decisively. Can't be hamstrung by things like criminal cases or, frankly, even other things.
Yeah, but he can't be, Jim. But Musk could be. Those wunderkinds could be. Everyone around him could be. They don't get that kind of privilege. A president might. But if everyone else is breaking the law because the president tells them to, they don't get that automatic
coverage, right? Is that correct? And
they,
all those wunderkinds and Elon Musk himself should be concerned about that, because the opinion from the Supreme Court says nothing about the underlings. It's always talking about the president, and that's the question. If people take assignments from the president, are they also covered? The answer is probably, at least under this order, not.
James Santel, former U.S. attorney, joining me all day today. You can chime in as well. 855-752-4842. Come back with us.
News from the Center, WRCE. Your news, conversations, and a whole lot of fun. It's all on your local Civic Media radio station or the Civic Media app.
For WRCE 107.7, I'm Joanne Krulatz. The cold weather is helping cranberry farms prep for the season. Brittany Merlo explains why.
Wisconsin is the number one cranberry producer, growing over 400,000 tons of crop every year. Once the harvest is over, they start flooding the cranberry beds with water and freezing them. And when the beds freeze, it gives the crop a protective layer of ice, which is crucial for it to survive. And when it's finally all ice, it's time to sand the beds. This protects the vines, stimulates root growth and renewal. And if the cranberry vines don't get enough water, they may die and cause issues for the farmers. This can also impact you, especially if you love to eat or use cranberries. So sometimes we have to weather the cold for a good reason. Cranberry season starts mid-September.
Craft breweries who use cans are getting crushed by tariffs. President Donald Trump's newly announced tariffs, a blanket duty of 25% on all steel and aluminum imports, are expected to negatively affect the nation's craft brewers by driving up the cost of critical materials used to brew, house, and serve their beer. Prices will probably go up. Sales data for beer in aluminum cans accounted for approximately 75% of craft breweries' packaged volume and revenue. The new tariffs, set to take effect on March 12th, are forecasted to raise producer prices for steel and aluminum by 15% to 20% in the coming months. Wisconsin Congressman Tom Tiffany has reintroduced legislation to remove the gray wolf from the endangered species list. Managing the gray wolf population has long been a topic of controversy in the state, with some arguing environmental agencies need more flexibility in managing the population, while others argue there should be a set population goal. Wisconsin has also seen an increase in the number of wolf attacks on livestock in recent years as the wolf population has bounced back. The legislation would prevent judges from overturning the change. I'm Joanne Krulatz.
On your entertainment beat, I'm Pete Schwabe. The third season of White Lotus has dropped on Max, and the HBO show has created some controversy thanks to nitpicky social media followers always looking for something to overanalyze. Every season has a new cast, location, and theme music. Season 2's theme music was so popular, it played in nightclubs across Europe. Season 3's theme music has not been well received. Great thing to stress over in this day and age. If you haven't seen White Lotus yet, give it a chance. Saturday Night Live kicks off a new 50 years in March. March hosts will include comedian Shane Gillis and Lady Gaga. Neither are strangers to the SNL stage. Gillis will host the show for the second time on March 1st. The musical act will be Tate McRae. Gaga will wear hosting and musical hats as she covers both roles on March 8th. Gaga has hosted the show before and performed as the musical guest 4 times previously. Wonder if they'll be invited to the 100th. For more showbiz fun, tune into Nightlight with me, Pete Schwabe, weeknights from 6 to 8 p.m. on the Civic Media Radio Network.
You can always continue the conversation on social media. Share your thoughts when you find and follow Civic Media on Facebook, X, and Instagram.
I'm meteorologist Mace Michaels. Mostly clear and cold tonight, lows 0 to 5 below. Sunny and milder tomorrow, highs in the mid-20s. Continued warming for the weekend, mostly sunny and around 30 Saturday, partly sunny and around 40 Sunday. Right now it's 22.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe.
What celebrity would you like to hug? It's International Hug Day. I wouldn't say Josh Brolin is like my favorite actor, but he's got like a quiet macho-ness to him. Actor Glenn Morshower joins us now.
My self-esteem was jolted when you did not mention me as your hugging preference.
I didn't want to rush it. I just want to see how. Let's just dip our toes in the water here and see what kind of relationship develops, shall we?
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. The Maggie Dawn Show.
Marquette University professor and pollster extraordinaire Charles Franklin.
Deporting immigrants who are in the U.S. illegally. 60% support that. But when we ask the same question and just add at the end, including those with jobs and no criminal record, then support drops to just 43%.
Wisconsinites have a sense of fairness.
The Maggie Dawn Show. Weekdays from 2 till 4 on your local Civic Media radio station and on the Civic Media app. Pete Schwabe.
On the next Nightlight, Norm Kapinski from Appleton Cigar joins the show and makes a popcorn pick of the week. And then president of the Fox Valley Veterans Council, Tim Cody, joins the show. Let's light it up.
Nightlight with Pete Schwabe. Weeknights from 6 till 8.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842, 855-75 Jess P.S. is on the board. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, a law review, joining me for the day across the table, Jim. Thank you for joining me. Talking about the efforts of DOGE, not a department. Not a department, so it's just called OGE.
These people who are showing up at doors saying, hi, I'll let me in. Even that, I have to tell you, this is very much in the weeds, but how do you, and I assume that they've got some letter from somebody, but even to get access to any federal office, including a U.S. attorney's office in Madison or Milwaukee or Green Bay, you have to have an access card, right? How are these people just walking in and getting access? And it just defies logic across the board. That's a small aspect of this, but also stunning to me.
There's an article from Washington Post. Trump comes close to the red line of openly defying judges, experts say. Faced with judges' orders to block certain initiatives, the Trump administration has found ways to tell courts it still has the authority to act. We're not withholding the money, Jim. We're just putting it through a different process to make sure that it's, you know, being allocated properly.
Right.
It's a new process. We're being efficient here.
Right.
And so they're slowing it down. I mean, they're not giving it. They're just, it's just taking them longer. I'd rather owe it to you forever than never pay you, Jim.
Exactly. And Judge, you're just not understanding what we're trying to do here. Let's try to explain it to you. And when those things happen, you know, when federal judges are treated that way, I know I appeared before them routinely and still do from time to time.
They don't take that too kindly.
And they're not real crazy about that kind of thing. And so in addition to this news coming out of the Wall Street Journal today, federal judge John McConnell, this is a couple of weeks ago, Dom, I think we talked about Rhode Island. He also said that, again, this is a judge who previously said you can't just withhold all these federal domestic funds out there, said stop doing it, temporary restraining order, and they continue to do it. And the judge comes out and says, you're failing to comply with my order. We have a word for that. It's called contempt. And this is also, again, in the category of hair on fire today, this is also when the system begins to break down, right? Because if you've got a federal judge with a Supreme Court or a federal district court judge, they're on a lifetime appointment, confirmed by the Senate once again. They've got this authority to do all this. And they say, this is what it's got to be. And yeah, maybe we're going to change things down the road. You've got a number more hearings coming up, more appeals. A federal judge tells you to do something, and the answer is no, I'm not doing that. That's when the republic begins to crumble. That is, again, a phrase often bandied about with wild abandon, is a constitutional crisis. That's getting close to it, if not right in the middle of that, when, again, Judge McConnell says, you're in violation of my order. And again, the White House says, I don't care.
From the Washington Post, McConnell accused the Trump administration of violating his order after nearly two dozen Democratic state attorneys general told him millions in funding for clean energy and transportation projects were still being impounded by the Trump administration. They're not supposed to be impounded. We'll go there next. The Justice Department responded that it worked in good faith to comply with McConnell's TRO, but believe some funding was exempt from the order and could still be frozen because it had been paused by a separate action, the Office of Management and Budget. The judge rejected the idea, writing that his order was, quote, clear and unambiguous, and there are no impediments to the defendant's compliance.
Unequivocal. Nice try, gentlemen and gentlewomen, for doing this. But once again, if you've got to do these kinds of legal and even linguistic gymnastics to get what you want, you know that you're not building your arguments on a strong foundation. This judge is calling them out. Hopefully, again, we'll enter the permanent TROs when these things go up to the Second Circuit there in New York or the D.C. Circuit in D.C., other places around the nation, that the appeals courts will also say, no, this is wrong. As we said before, the concern is when this gets up to the Supreme Court, will John Roberts likewise say, yeah, this is a bridge too far. You are now violating the clear commission of the law, which is that when the legislature passes a budget, and yes, there's an appropriations process and there's an allocation, all kinds of A words out there that are a part of the process. But the president has the obligation to do what? To execute on that. That's where the executive language comes, right? And you don't. And this is what got Richard Nixon in part in trouble. It's the impoundment word that you just used, Dom, right? You can't simply say, well, another branch of government has done this. I'm not going to follow that. Or if you do then, and a judge tells you, no, no, Mr. President, or one day, Madam President, you can't simply be out there freelancing it. You need to abide by that. This White House is not. And that should also have people, frankly, in the streets, as we're beginning to see a groundswell of that happening in America.
James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, 855-752-4842. The citizenship. Now, my understanding is this has been, where do we stand on that? Was there a ruling today, yesterday?
We've got all kinds of judges across the country. We had one initially out in Washington, and they're at various stages along the way. They will probably be appealed because, once again, the lawyers there say that there's this jurisdictional language inside the 14th Amendment as well, but you've got to be subject to the jurisdiction of the federal government of the United States of America, and therefore, for example, if you are not actually born of people who already are here, don't have jurisdiction over them, therefore we don't have jurisdiction over you, and you can't be a citizen. That also, of course, brings too far into the ambit of prohibited people our Native American Indian population, right?
I mean,
right?
Come on.
It's just absurd. And yet, again, and I will not say high marks, very low marks for trying to find some language to justify what they're doing. The good news is for your listeners across the country, judges are not buying this. And hopefully, again, if it gets to the Supreme Court, this absurd notion, hopefully the Supreme Court won't even take it and say, no, no, the lower courts have got this just right.
Reuters is reporting 6 hours ago today that the U.S. Appeals Court rejects Trump's emergency bid to curtail birthright citizenship. They rejected the request to stay the nationwide injunction. A Trump-appointed judge says courts have never recognized an exception to birthright citizenship. Cases are pending before two other appellate courts as well.
Right. And so you've got, interestingly, you will not have a division among the appeals courts, which is sometimes the reason why Supreme Court takes a case, right? If the Sixth Circuit and the Seventh Circuit
this
are right.
San Francisco, right? Man.
Exactly,
this is the night.
Right,
I mean, those libs out there in California.
Exactly, right? You've got appeals court judges around the country saying the same sort of thing, shutting all this down. Typically, again, the United States Supreme Court, one of the bases upon which it grants review is, well, if there's a split in the circuits, it's good to have uniformity across the way. This is not that situation. I would hope that John Roberts and the others would look at this. We know that at least three members of the Supreme Court would not grant certiorari on this. We'd hope the entire Supreme Court would say, yeah, our lower court, federal appeals court, and district court judges have gotten this right. Let's look at some of the other 62 or 63 cases we've got pending right now. Let's spend our time on those.
If these other cases, now this one in the ninth, there's apparently two other cases between before appellate courts. If all three of them come back and reject this premise, certainly the Trump administration will still kick it up to the U.S.
Sure.
Supreme Court. Do you think if it's 3-0 that they would not take it?
I think there's a strong likelihood. And again, the Trump administration, through the Solicitor General, your Solicitor General right now, you should know, is advocating for just the opposite, right?
Your Solicitor General.
Right? If indeed you've got 3, 4, 5, 6 appeals courts up and all of these cases are being appealed, number one, highly likely the Supreme Court would consolidate all of them, so you're not doing this piecemeal. And second, you'd like to think that they would issue one of these unsigned orders sometime on Friday at 9:15 at night saying, no, no, we're not going to be doing any review here, and it goes away. And the law then remains the law from the appeals courts.
855-752-4842, 855-75-CIVIC. I think it was Caroline Leavitt. We have some sound, Jess, of Caroline Leavitt, the White House.
Yeah, we do.
Let's. This kind of goes a little bit to this point, and I want to get your reaction to, Jim, if you would please. Let's play cut number one, please.
The president has already signed 73 executive orders. That is more than double the number signed by Joe Biden and more than quadruple the number signed by Barack Obama over the same period.
Yeah, and I mean, executive.
Right.
What? I mean, the fact that you can't go to Congress or you're not going to Congress.
Right.
How many pieces of legislation has the president signed?
Zero. Right.
How many things have you introduced in, again, through legislators there and said, we'd like to do this? We'd like to do these other things. We would like, for example, to bring the Department of Education to an end here, introduce legislation. That's the only way that can be done. Do some of that. He's not doing any of that. So the very fact that he's got his numbers. numbers are higher on this. Yeah. I'm trying mightily to figure out a good analogy to this. Again, just because it's so unprecedented, it's nothing is coming to mind. This the numbers game, Carolyn, is not what you want to seize upon. It's the merits of these things.
Right.
And 99.9% of them. He's done a couple of things which are okay around the edges. The great majority of them are abject craziness.
I mean, to put it in Trump's terms, he should look at executive orders like a golf score.
Yes.
The lower,
there's the
better.
The analogy.
It's not a basketball score.
Right.
Where the
right.
higher, the better.
Right.
You know what I mean?
Right.
There's no... What is so positive about an executive just spouting out executive right. orders nonstop? Yeah, and what? He could do 70 more. So
absolutely.
What?
Tonight, tomorrow, right? Right. And here's the other cynical part of it. How dare you, Caroline Leavitt? Because what she's really doing is she's playing to the lowest common denominators in our nation, right?
Yeah.
People think, oh, well, did you hear that? At Fish Fries tomorrow night around Wisconsin, other places, people are saying, did you hear how effective our president's being? He has already issued all these. And that Obama guy, that Biden guy, they weren't attentive to this. He's working hard. And she's sending this message that somehow the numbers of these translate into substantive changes to the good in America. It is so cynical. She's relying upon the, with due respect to the population in America, the ignorance and the lack of familiarity and the lack of basic understanding how civics works in America. She's relying upon that. And, of course, that's the basis upon which Donald Trump has built his entire political career.
And was it Carlin who said, you know, think about how dumb the average person is. And then think about the fact that 50% of the people are dumber than that person.
Right.
And certainly they prey on this. I mean,
absolutely.
It's a high score. Mm-hmm. It must be great. He's being awesome.
Right.
He's very efficient. We got one more from Caroline Leavitt. If you would please just play the historic start cut number two, please.
Today marks 1 month of President Trump's return.
Oh, my God.
Tell
Oval
us about
office,
it.
And there is no denying this administration is off to a historic start.
Yes. We can't agree on that, Caroline. There's no doubt.
I don't know. It's not like right track, wrong track. I mean, yes, historic. Historically terrible, but it is historic. We have what? How's Miller? Let's do the Stephen Miller too. I mean, we're gonna get all the sycophants
sure.
and suck ups.
Let's
get Stephen Miller out there too. But how great everything is!
He has packed 8 years of transformative action, restoring this nation, restoring our laws, restoring fairness, restoring economic opportunity, restoring national security.
What?
No president comes close
what?
To what Donald Trump has achieved over just the last 30 days.
I repeat my statement.
Wow. So the sycophancy, I don't know what the word is, the ass-kissing, the suck-up, the weirdness, the
demand
the whole,
for complete loyalty
yeah,
in everything
man,
you
that
do.
Just, that's like really North Korea-y, like evil James Bond-y bad guy thing to me to have that kind of suck-up, man.
Right,
I mean,
right.
I get you want to you know support the boss, but damn.
Right, right. And at some point, don't you go home, too. And I still believe that people like Stephen Miller, I believe that they are not, plainly, they're not operating the best interests of the government, of the people, frankly, even of this president. But that's a road too far, I recognize. But he's got to go home at night and say, you know what? Guess what I just said today? And let's watch that on the CBS Evening News. And I'd like to think they're chuckling wildly because, once again, they're deceiving at least a significant portion of the American population. Shame on you, Stephen Miller.
855-752-4842. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, a law review, broadcasting right here at the Civic Media Radio Network on Saturdays. On Saturdays, Jim, I'll be checking you out this Saturday, 9 to 11 a.m. But we got him today. We got him early. You can join us as well. Get to the callers and the text coming up next, 855-75-CIVIC.
This is News from the Setter, WRCE.
There was a time when barbecue was perfect. A strong, reliable flavor that could be counted on.
But then big manufacturers decided that barbecue needed to be zesty or spicy or sweeter or whatever. If you miss the good old days of great tasting barbecue, we'd like to introduce you to Grandpa's Barbecue. Made in small batches from Grandpa's original recipe. Buy yours online today at grandpasbarbecueshop.com.
You're listening to the American Democracy Minute, keeping your government by and for the people. Mississippi has one of the country's worst records for protecting voting rights and advancing democracy reforms. So when pro-voter bills emerge from the state House and Senate, like in-person early voting and the ability to cure a mismatched absentee signature, democracy advocates take notice. Mississippi is one of only three states without some form of in-person early voting, along with Alabama and New Hampshire. The Mississippi Free Press reports that February 12th, the Mississippi Senate passed SB 2654, allowing 15 days of early voting, ending the Saturday before the election at noon. The Republican-sponsored bill passed 39-12, but even if the House advances, it may still be vetoed by Mississippi Governor Tate Reeves, who accused the bill's sponsor of making the state's elections less secure. The Mississippi House also took some positive steps. HB 1419 prohibits moving or closing a polling place location within 60 days of an election, sometimes used as a voter suppression tactic. HB 163 sets rules for absentee ballots where the signature on file doesn't match the signed outer ballot envelope and would give the voter a chance to cure the problem. And HB 288 would make each county's five election commissioners nonpartisan positions. All three bills now move to the Senate. We have more on these bills and local reporting at AmericanDemocracyMinute.org. I'm Brian Beal.
You're listening to News from the Center, WRCE.
And welcome back to the Dom Salvia Show, 855-752-4842. Jess P.S. on the board. James Santel, former U.S. Attorney, host of Amicus, joining me today. Going to get to the lines right now. I got some texters out there, too. Executive orders, who cares? Who had the most Big Macs is the most important contest. Well, I think we know who that was. 855-75-CIVIC. We'll go to Gail from Kenosha. Hey, Gail, welcome. What do you got for us?
Yes. With all the lawsuits against Trump, doesn't that take the taxpayers' money to defend those off?
Of course it does.
Absolutely,
Gail. And so right. What you've got are, you've got now the lawyers in, Dom is going to love this as I say it, inside your Justice Department who are not enforcing the environmental laws, who are not enforcing the civil rights laws, because we know the Civil Rights Division has been all but shut down. But they're running around the country now necessarily, and they're appearing in these federal district courts quite literally across the country. And they're representing you. They're saying, I represent the people of the United States of America. And because of that, now they're salaried people, so it's not as if they're private attorneys who are getting paid by the hour and a contingency fee. But it's a resource question, right, Gail? And so you've got it right in the head. If you're not doing the real important work of the people and of U.S. Attorney's Office and Department of Justice in all sorts of areas, including national security and antitrust and tax and environment and all kinds of things out there, civil rights, civil cases generally. If you're not doing that, you're doing this instead.
Opportunity cost, Gail.
One more question.
Yeah, go ahead.
Yes, I have one more question about the people that they're deporting, and they probably have to leave all their possessions behind, or most of them, and some might be sentimental, some might be their pets. Do these people have a chance to, like, sue in the future?
You know, the answer is, and this is a wonderful thing about our nation, right? Even here on the 20th, the month into the this presidency, you are protected by the Constitution of the United States of America by virtue of your being here, right? It's not just citizens and residents. And if there has been what's called an improper taking, that means exactly what it sounds like. If the government has taken, this is why, for example, you've got a process of eminent domain when the government comes in and says, you know what, we need to use your property to make a street or something else. What happens
like
is...
Fox-
Comic-Con.
Exactly. There you go. Right down the street here. Right? Right? If the government does that, if it takes your property, it has to compensate you. And that applies to all kinds of things across the board, including the kinds of claims that you're identifying right now, Gail. If the government has improperly treated you, you've got a cause of action. Now, you need lawyers, yes, indeed, to find the statutory basis behind it. And so it is not an easy thing to do. And, Gail, as you've identified, you've got people who are leaving quickly right now because of, and that's part of this too, right, is to send this sense of fear, drop everything. Leave your pets behind. Leave your possessions, your worldly
possessions.
I've
seen some reporting that some folks are like, they're shipping their stuff. Like, sure. They're from Mexico, right. And you're here working on the farm in Wisconsin.
Right.
If this is going to go down, you know what's going to happen, and they don't want to lose their stuff. Absolutely. And to Gail's point, you can sue, but you got to have the money, you got to have the wherewithal, you got to, good luck. I mean, that's tough,
And if you're no longer physically here, it makes it very difficult
as
well.
And if you're here, working in the dairy farms with an accurate, wrong social security number, you're probably not, collecting a whole lot of money you can afford to use to pay for attorneys. I mean, it's just saying. So, yes, the answer is sure you can, but, can you afford it? That's the question. 855-752-4842. Cindy from Appleton, you will be next. Welcome, Cindy. What do you got for us?
Well, I'm calling what the convicted rapist is doing is an evil contest. He's out to get as many evil points as possible.
He's like Dr. Evil? Is that what I'm hearing?
And that's why, Cindy, his press secretary is identifying the numbers, right, of executive orders. It's to your point about evil points. Is that it? Yeah.
Yep, absolutely. I mean, this would be funny, but it's so freaking scary.
It is.
I don't understand how people are still – I mean, I can't believe the people that are still supporting him. I had another woman tell me today, the whole thing about Social Security, that's the truth. All these people are collecting it that shouldn't be. And I'm just like, that is not true.
Simply not true.
They're just buying into this crap.
Yeah, thank you, Cindy. And that, that's of course the hard thing to deal with is our friends and family and people around us that buy into it and not go ape crap on them, and even as we talked a little bit about yesterday, this whole Doge thing and Elon Musk, sometimes we're not going to bat 1,000, we're going to get some things wrong. Well, in their one of their lineups of the receipts, they had an $8 billion number where an $8 million number should have been.
It's just a zero, Dom.
I mean, come on.
Or several zeros, actually.
And you can't, and so I don't have, they don't have credibility with me, man. That's a big problem here, and we don't know what's going on behind the scenes, as you mentioned. I mean, once they're in, how are they getting in? Who's doing? How's that even possible?
How is this happening? Right. And Cindy, to your friend who says that all these things are terrific and finally we're getting Social Security all cleaned up, ask your friend, Cindy, if she is comfortable with the notion that there are 20-year-olds, again, presumably without background checks, who are going in and getting your friend's financial data, employment information,
health data,
addresses for anyone with a Social Security number, health data, all those kinds of things. When Elon Musk comes knocking at the door of the Social Security Administration, and yes, indeed, the acting director resigns. Her name is Michelle King. She says, I cannot countenance this. I cannot stand by and watch this happening because it's so contrary to what the law says. And all this information is one day in the hands of these people, once again, who do not have government clearances and all these other things that are necessary for the integrity of the operation of government. How does your friend feel about that? That her financial information, Social Security number, frankly, a lot of people have other financial things in there, are exposed to non-governmental parties.
It's going to take the federal courts, perhaps, maybe some state attorneys general. Folks, stand up, be heard. 855-752-4842. Is there a new world order taking shape? Is that what you voted for? Just a lower price of eggs? Come back with us. Plus, Mayor Eric Adams and the governor of New York.
Some of the things that I say will be incorrect.
News from the Center, WRCE. Todd Albaugh.
Hey, everybody. Join us next time as we continue our live coverage of the American Birkebeiner from downtown Hayward, Wisconsin. Brady Ewing, Peter Rapine, and you. Join us.
The Todd Albaugh Show, weekdays noon till 2.
Matt Nair on Air.
Oh, Randy Manor is here.
What can you do about this? Focus on what you can impact. Find the courage to speak up to your elected official. If you are silent, then your elected official at the local, state, or federal level will think you completely agree with whatever it is you're doing.
Silence equals acceptance.
Correct.
Matt Nair on Air, weekdays 10 till noon on your local civic media radio station and on the app.
Enjoying this local program? Find the complete Civic Media lineup at civicmedia.us or the Civic Media app.
This is News from the Center, 1450 AM WRCE and 107.7 FM W299 CD Richland Center. And always on the Civic Media app.
ABC News, I'm Michelle Franz, and National Security Advisor Mike Waltz says President Trump is frustrated with Ukraine's President Zelensky following the escalation of words in the past few days, the president blaming Ukraine for Russia's invasion. President Zelensky responded, saying Trump was living in a disinformation space. Waltz says he remains confident the U.S. can make a peace deal.
We have to talk to both sides in order to get to both sides to the table. And both sides have said only President Trump could do that.
The IRS starting the layoff, some 6,000 new and newly promoted employees across the country. A source familiar with the planning told ABC News are getting pink slips. It comes as the tax filing season heats up. A group of federal probationary workers, meantime, across multiple agencies tell ABC News even though they accepted the White House's offer to resign, they've still been fired. Israeli police say a series of explosions occurring on buses in Tel Aviv today in what they called a suspected terror attack. No one was injured. This is ABC News.